We're going to go in a moment to look at the film The Martian and other films like it.
Hey, we're Axe Girl!
Woo! And you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
Now, The Martian opened on October the 1st. It's a long movie. It's 2 hours, 21 minutes. And in it, astronaut Mark Watney, played by Matt Damon, is left for dead on Mars. And it's based on a book by Andy Weir. Now, we've had Andy Weir on the show 2 weeks ago, and we've had a lot of people discussing it on last week's show, and we're going to have a big discussion about it now. But first up, let's compare it to some other movies. And so the movie Martian, as I said, is currently screening at Cinema Nova in Carlton and at lots of other cinemas around Melbourne. And this evening we're going to review the movie and draw parallels between it and other space-themed films. Now, one thread we have decided to pick up on is that of one person stranded beyond apparent rescue and having to struggle to survive, be it against isolation itself, or against an alien being, the deadly environmental conditions on Mars, or a malevolent computer. In 1968, director Stanley Kubrick, in the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey, had the computer HAL kill all of the crew except Dave Bowman whilst en route to Jupiter. It's going to be a little clip from what some people regard as one of the greatest science fiction films ever. And while you may differ in your opinion, some people say it's deadly boring, but in 1968, this was the go.
Oh, HAL, do you read me? Do you read me, HAL?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, HAL?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, HAL.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me, and I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Where the hell did you get that idea, HAL?
Dave, although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
All right, HAL. I'll go in through the emergency airlock.
Without your space helmet, Dave, you're going to find that rather difficult.
HAL, I won't argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
The year 2000 saw two ridiculous Mars-themed films. Red Planet had as its central premise that in 2050 the Earth is dying and Mars is being terraformed. Why this is easier than saving Earth's environment is never explained. Kate Bowman, presumably no relative of Dave Bowman, is left alone in orbit around Mars when the rest of the crew land on the Red Planet. Believing that the landing party is dead, Kate must struggle to overcome failing systems on her spaceship and prepare to head home alone.
Houston, this is Mars One. We have experienced a massive proton field upset sequel to a solar flare. Mars One systems at below 70%, orbital path degraded by fire control air purge. Engine function zero. MEV launched with a crew of five. I have visual on crash site. I can see one person down. I have absolutely no radio contact with them. Houston, visuals confirm that HAB-1 is Tango uniform. I repeat, HAB-1 has been destroyed. Even if the rest of the team is alive, they have no way to survive. I'm uploading telemetry and video data to you now.
Attention, Commander. Incoming relay.
Mars One, this is Houston. We got your message and we're glad to hear your voice. Analysis of your telemetry indicates Mars One orbital failure in 31 hours. The good news is we'll have you out of there by then. We believe we can restore engine function for a main engine burn and exit from Mars orbit. Ground crew is presumed end of mission. Houston out.
Sorry, Commander. No response from ignition systems.
Houston, Mars One. No joy in all scenarios for engine ignition. That includes hitting the console. What next? Over. In
God, I wish I didn't have to wait 40 minutes to hear your answer.
Just as silly, in the same year, the movie Mission to Mars was inflicted on the cinema-going public. Luke Graham is the sole survivor of a crew that met the forces exerted by the face on Cydonia. Set in 2020, Luke manages to get a message back to Earth, then settles in to survive the harsh Martian conditions.
They all died. The force came out of the top of the mountain and everybody died, but I was spared. Why? Why? It had to be for a reason. And then all of a sudden, I knew the reason why. It's so someone would be left to figure out the secret.
Jump now to 2009 and Duncan Jones's Moon. Sam Bell is nearing the completion of a three-year-long contract as solo supervisor of an energy mining operation on the lunar far side. The base's vigilant computer Gertie is his sole companion. As with 2001's Hell, all is not as it at first seems.
I'm sorry, Sam.
What?
Sam, I'm under strict orders not to let you outside.
I don't appreciate that. It's being treated like a child. I don't appreciate it.
Gertie, come here!
What happened?
I don't know. Meteorites.
There have been no meteorites, Sam.
Micrometeorites, maybe. I don't know. Either way, there might be damage to the exterior shell. You better let me go outside and take a look.
There is no damage to the exterior shell.
Well, it's not that I don't believe you, Gertie, but, I mean, you know, this thing is springing leaks like an Acme fire hose. You need to let me go outside and fix this problem, Gertie.
I can't let you go outside, Sam.
Gertie, if you don't let me go outside, we can't fix this leak.
I'm not permitted to let you go outside.
We'll keep it between you and me, okay, pal?
In 2011, William Eubank explored the fundamental human need for connection in the movie Love. Featuring the music of Angels and Airwaves, this film follows the fate of an astronaut, Lee Miller, as he becomes stranded in orbit alone aboard the International Space Station. Some disaster, possibly a nuclear war, leaves him in a struggle to stay alive on the alien space station without support from or contact with the Earth.
Houston, Cambridge, do you copy?
Hello, Lee. Sorry I'm sending this message as a recording. But I'll be honest, it's the best I can do right now. Still, I'm kind of glad I don't have to tell you this directly. We've got some shit going on down here that I don't even know where to begin. If I wanted to bring you out of orbit, I don't have the people to do it. Look, we're going to need you to sit tight for a while. Sorry.
I don't know what kind of transmission that was, and unless I'm mistaken, we're nowhere near April. So I'm going to need a confirmation of any sort of mission extension from you assholes. Look, I don't think it's funny, and if you guys are doing some type of stress experiments or isolation test, well, you can stop now because I'm very isolated and very stressed. If the line is open enough for me to get a pre-recorded message, then I know you can hear me, and I would appreciate knowing what the hell is going on. This is ISS. Do you copy?
The disaster in Love left Lee Miller's space station intact. In director Alfonso Cuarón's 2013 movie Gravity, astronaut Ryan Stone was not so lucky. A series of disasters destroys first her space shuttle and then her refuge in the International Space Station. As in these other movies, Ryan needs to call upon all her skills to survive this ordeal alone.
Houston in the blind. This is Mission Specialist Ryan Stone reporting from the ISS. All communications with Mission Commander Matthew Kowalski have been lost. Radio transmission absent. Visuals non-existent. To confirm, I, Ryan Stone, am the sole survivor of SDS-157.
Well, this year, 2015, saw the release of the Australian science fiction film Infini. I saw it last week at the Cinema Nova as part of the Australian Film Institute's awards screenings. An Elite search and rescue team travel in Star Trek Beam Me Up Scotty style to an off-world mining facility called Infini. Their aim is to rescue Whit Carmichael, the lone survivor of a biological outbreak that has killed everyone else.
Everything okay? Whatever you have to do, you come home to us at the end.
I promise you, I'll be home.
Gentlemen, Mr. Whit Carmichael's first day in the big leagues.
You're gonna fit right in.
You bitches ready to rock?
Okay, listen up, Infini. Furthest outpost in our galaxy. We are relying on you, our best search and rescue team, to get this job done.
So they're all dead?
All but one. Whit Carmichael. Bring this Carmichael home. Be prepared for anything.
There better be a hell of a big bonus for this.
Don't touch anything.
Body, 2 o'clock. Look at his neck.
Look at that.
Which brings us to The Martian, which has been screening since October the 1st at Cinema Nova and other cinemas. Astronaut Mark Wattman is left for dead on the surface of Mars and his crewmates head back to Earth. The film traces his struggle to survive in the harsh Martian environment. There are no malevolent computers. There's no demented corporate leaders set to kill him and replace him with someone else. There's no alien monsters. Mars is not terraformed into a habitable planet, and there's no weird faces on Mars. And spaceships don't get smashed to smithereens, and nor is there teleportation or wormholes. Just a fairly realistic tale of one man's struggle to survive using science and realistic technology. And yes, we all know that he'll be rescued. So is it boring without these sci-fi staples? Not in the least. The tension builds throughout as problem after problem is encountered. I even found myself shedding a tear when I thought of Donna Shirley when her 1990s Sojourner Rover and the Pathfinder Lander played a key role in the movie. It would have been nice to have had her name mentioned in the film, but it wasn't. Now, joining us here on the Space Show to discuss the movie, we have Peter Arwood, who is the President of the Space Association of Australia, Guy Murphy from the Mars Society's Melbourne chapter, and Josh Richard, who wants to be a Martian. So, welcome. Let's make sure the mics are on, and let's try. Peter, hello.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, guys.
Guy.
Hi there, Andrew.
And Josh.
I'm hoping mine's on as well. There we go.
Yes, we all are. Now, you've just heard those movies. Which do you think of those as the worst?
Worst.
Guy? That's Guy.
Well, I've made, a close study of the various Mars movies that come out, and there really hasn't been a realistic, compelling Mars movie that realistically tells the story of what humans going to Mars will be like, and the actual dramas and what's interesting and intriguing about it. All the previous movies have been fantasy to various farcical degrees, with some canny interesting moments here and there, but The Martian just really sets a new standard in all respects, I think.
And Josh?
To be honest with you, I think it depends on what you're looking for. I loved The Martian. It was fantastic. I also love Mission to Mars because it's utterly ridiculous and hilarious, inadvertently. I guess it all depends on what you're after.
My favourite scene in Mission to Mars was when the two were dancing in zero gravity.
So that was brilliant. And the M&Ms so well as well, with the DNA, yes, and all sorts. It was just, yes, stupid. It was great.
It just got stupid when they got down onto Mars.
A little bit, yeah. Yes.
Peter?
My favourite was Dark Star. I've never even heard of that, but it, basically they're a demolition crew. They go around blowing up planets that are gone unstable.
Ah, but is it one person on its own?
I can't remember. But anyway, the bomb decides that it wants to blow itself up. So, but yeah, no, I thought The Martian was a good movie. I enjoyed it. It was a bit of a ride. And it was not. I like the fact that they try to stick with a bit of science and a bit of reality in there. Obviously, there's a few artistic licenses taken, as they fully acknowledge in their in the lead up to the movie. And if you just park that and enjoy the ride, I think it's really good.
Okay, so let's go through The Martian and look at a couple of the good points that you saw in it. Guy, you said it's fairly realistic.
Yes, it's really realistic in terms of a lot of the technical detail as the mission hardware is portrayed, such as the design and layout of the landing base and the vehicle that's used to travel around and the vehicle for getting back up to orbit, but also in terms of the various human psychological aspects of the whole experience, from the level of the stresses and isolated, stranded individual experiences and some of the strange things that can arise from that, but also how teams and isolated environments interact with each other and bond and function. And then you had other moments about how an isolated team relates to the mission control back home across the distance and how mission control breaks bad news or keeps the team happy and the mission on track. So there was actually a lot to unpack in it if you followed it very closely. So that impressed me.
Yeah, I found that the reluctance to reveal the full truth to the astronauts aboard the Hermes, which is the name of the spaceship that the main crew is on, was reasonably realistic because, remember this, John Glenn, 1962, heat shield signal says the heat shield may be detached, this may have killed Glenn. They didn't want to tell Glenn until he demanded to know what the hell were they giving these strange instructions that weren't part of his training. Then, of course, STS-107, Special Columbia in 2004. Mm-hmm. Wing was damaged. People on the ground sort of thought, yeah, but they didn't tell the crew. So I found that part of the mission to Mars, the Martian, quite realistic.
Yeah, it's one of the very difficult dilemmas that arises, and it's a moral issue as well as a social issue, and it has implications about the success or failure of the mission, potentially. So it is something that is crews and mission planners will have to deal with on future missions, and as you point out, that they've had to deal with already. So that's just going to be a recurring theme when humans do go to Mars.
Mm. Now, Josh, you want to be a Martian?
Well, that's certainly the idea, yeah.
One-way trip?
Yeah, well, I suppose what you're referring to is me being one of 100 people shortlisted worldwide to the Mars One project. And, yeah, absolutely one-way trip. I kind of understand why Mark wants to come home, but it wouldn't be a compelling reason for me, to be honest with you.
Okay, but
don't
that's
you get
not
sick
a
of the potatoes?
Well, yeah, I think I could live with potatoes. Yeah. I could do that. Yeah.
That's the same way in which many migrants, say, from Europe to Australia, came out on a one-way trip. They knew they weren't ever going to go back home.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people talk about the migration side of things and all of that. I like to look at what we're trying to achieve less about migration and more about sort of setting up a permanent colony. I look at it more like, say, Mawson setting up one of the ice camps on the Antarctic and not necessarily trying to reach the South Pole and do something really extreme, but actually set up something so that it makes further exploration much easier.
So did you sort of see the film, The Martian, as realistic in that context?
Yeah, I see it very much as an extension of what NASA is trying to achieve. There was a lot of technologies in there that are sort of near what NASA wants to achieve and certainly the direction they're going. But the reality is NASA is just one agency. It's certainly the biggest and certainly the got the best PR program of everyone else, but it's one of many possible sort of future directions that space exploration could go in.
Josh, did you see any technologies in there that sort of are similar to what you envisaging the Mars One design team are coming up with or hoping to achieve?
I can tell you one that we're not going to be looking at. That's the Mars Ascent vehicle.
Okay.
Obviously. it's an interesting one. Everyone sort of goes, why go one way? The reality is the heaviest payload that we're dealing with is sort of 7.5 tonne, and the lightest MAV that NASA has talked about is 40 tonne. And right. If we start talking about landing heavy things on the surface of Mars, that's why the Mars One architecture is as simple as it is, because we're dealing with much lower payloads right from the start. But we've got to stay.
Sure. Perhaps we should backtrack, because many people will have never heard of Mars One. They won't know what you're talking about. So could you give us an outline of what Mars One is and your involvement in it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mars One is an international not-for-profit organisation based in the Netherlands, which is essentially, its stated goal is the human colonisation of Mars. The current architecture of their plan is essentially to probe Mars over a series of years, essentially work out where we want to land a colony, start sending supplies and have it all set up robotically, build a base that is waiting there for humans to arrive. The current launch date that we're looking at is the window that opens in September 2026, so 7 months later, landing people April 2027. That has already slipped 4 years. It was originally sort of 2023, and it's already been pushed back 4 years. So it's a flexible timeline that we're operating to. My involvement was I once upon a time worked as a comedian. I still do. And I just finished writing, I just finished performing a show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2012. I'd had the idea of writing a comedy show about sending people one way to Mars for quite a few years. I knew that we could do it. I knew that Robert Zubrin had come up with different ideas. There was all kinds of politics that had stopped people from going one way. And I wanted to write a comedy show saying, hey, let's do it. And when I started researching the show, I found these guys had essentially made their first press release about 3 days before. So the timing was pretty extraordinary. And I thought, rather than complain about it and sort of turn around and say, we should do this, I put my hand up to do it.
I should think that a comedy on a long-duration space mission, such as Mars One would be quite an asset.
It's certainly more helpful than disco. That's definitely the reality.
reference to disco, for those who haven't seen the Mars One movie, is to the musical tastes of some of the crew members on the Martian movie. So what other skills do you bring?
I suppose they're looking for diversity. They're looking for versatility and things like that. And that's something that I suppose I've been lucky enough to have a fair bit of. I've talked about career ADD in the past. So I studied applied physics and psych at uni and then worked with the military for about 6 years with the Australian Forces and the UK, and worked in art, worked in comedy, worked in all sorts of different areas. So they're less interested in sending a highly technical engineer, a highly technical doctor, a psychologist, and I don't know who else you'd want to send. They want to send four MacGyvers. That's the reality. They want to send four people who can do a little bit of everything so that if your doctor gets sick, everyone else is still able to look after them.
Well, you see the astronauts aboard the International Space Station, for example, when they're asked to repair something, they've got a manual that's probably just been emailed up to them. And they are just following that. Yeah. Do this, do that, do the other. So anyone could do that, couldn't they?
Well, that's the idea. I suppose the real skill with training as astronauts is that you know those different checklists inside and out, so that if you don't have access to it, you still know the systems so intimately that you can still repair them. If there's a problem with your communications, with your radio, and say you've lost a section of the space station that had all of those manuals, you should be able to problem solve it and work it out from there. And that, I suppose, that's why it takes them so long to be trained to go and do what they do.
Now, the movie The Martian, did you find the technology you saw there fairly realistic or just...
It depends on what you're looking for. I saw The Martian very much as an extension of the direction NASA's going. We're obviously looking at something very different, but it is an extension of the state of the art. So everyone's talking about the same sort of idea. Everyone wants to get to Mars pretty much the same sort of way. The difference, I suppose, is how long do you stay there, how do you design the systems to remain on the surface of Mars, and whether or not you come home again. Our systems will be far more rugged than, say, one of the interesting plot points, and I'm certainly not spoiling anything in The Martian here, but he has an airlock fail. And in the book, it talks about how the airlock was designed for a 30-day mission, and they had redundancy to go beyond that. We're talking about building systems that are obviously much hardier than that wouldn't fail as quickly as that did.
I've seen people on the space station when they're closing hatches very carefully wiping off every last speck of dust to make sure that it hermetically seals. And yet Mars is such a dusty place. How would you cope with that sort of dust?
I suppose we're looking at different complexity of systems. So the big one for us is keeping it all very simple. Mm-hmm. The International Space Station is an extraordinarily complex piece of equipment. It has to essentially keep itself cool. That's the biggest challenge for the space station, is keeping itself cool and heated as it orbits around in the sun. We're talking about something that's on the ground. We can radiate that heat into the Martian soil, and it simplifies all our heating and cooling systems considerably. So the space station's also based very much on technology that was developed in the 70s and the 80s. They still have computer systems up there that are still pretty old. It was the same with the space shuttle. They were going up there and changing cassettes and things like that, even well into the 2000s. So we're talking about essentially bringing the technology that we've got currently and applying it to something that we're going to do in, you know, 10, 15 years' time.
Now, Guy, you've seen hundreds of pictures of Mars from both orbit and the ground. Did you find the scenery shown in the movie The Martian as realistic or just so way out?
It was very realistic, and that was one of the things I really enjoyed about the movie. It was very beautiful, but there was diversity in some of the landscapes, and there was very finely observed detail about meteorology, for example, things like little whirlwinds in the distance. The weather was very accurate, apart from perhaps the ferocity of the storm in the opening scene, but I won't go into that in more detail. But apart from that, as a sense of Mars as a place, it was quite compelling and very beautiful, and that was also used as a device to communicate the isolation of the lead character. He was a tiny little speck in an enormous, vast alien landscape. He was the only thing that animated thing that moved, and that was a technological artifact. And so that was a good thing about the movie. Previous movies had some, I thought Red Planet had some very beautiful scenes in it that were sort of quite analytical almost, but The Martian was quite consistent about it and quite studied about it. So,
now, cooperation between agencies, that's one of the key plot points in this movie. Eventually you get some cooperation between China and the United States. Would that happen in real life?
Well, potentially it could. I mean, I thought the movie addressed that and presented the concept in quite a fresh and a generous way. We tend to, by default, think that major powers in space are going to compete in the same way they might compete on Earth, in a hostile way, almost a subconscious replay of the US versus the Soviet Union. But it doesn't necessarily have to be like that. The mission to that was stranded on Mars was an international crew. We saw there were team members of different nationalities, but I think it showed something. It was quite refreshing in the way it showed the potential for collaboration, and that China may not necessarily be an enemy in space. It can be quite a willing collaborator and have something very valuable and important to contribute.
And we must remember that during Apollo 13, during that emergency, the Soviet Union, as it was then, offered to help the United States if required.
Yes, and it draws on the tradition of what we do when disasters happen, when there's ships stricken at sea, everyone goes to help regardless of the flag. A very old tradition of that, and I guess the plot line of China collaborating to help with the rescue of Mark Watney, we sort of reflected that tradition.
Well, Josh, just one quick yes or no. Will you take duct tape with you when you go to Mars?
Of course.
Okay. Well, we've been with Josh Richard, who is an aspirant for the Mars One mission to Mars, Guy Murphy from the Mars Society Melbourne branch, and Peter Arwood from the Space Association of Australia. Well, we're out of time here. We're going to talk more about the Martian next week and more about Sky Muster, but we've got to hand over now to Nick Black and his program, Purple Haze. Over to you, Nick.